Is the world getting riskier as Robert Mueller's Russia investigation unfolds? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Financial markets are driven by understanding and exploiting risk. What is the risk profile of this Russia investigation that has now led to indictments and, in one case, a guilty plea involving people who helped Donald Trump's campaign? From time to time, we check in with Ian Bremmer, president and founder of Eurasia Group, based in New York. It researches and assesses global political risk for corporate clients. Bremmer says risk is on the rise as he looks at scenarios that could play out with the Russia probe.
When all of this eventually comes out, it's going to include lots of information on oligarchs with an awful lot of money who are very close to the Russian president. And Putin's not going to like that coming out. So he's likely to react. And we know that there's been lots of information through the Russians on the Democratic National Committee that's been made public. But they've done very little of that, really none, against the Republicans and against Trump and against Trump's family. And so, you know, if Putin starts doing that, what does that mean for the U.S.-Russia relations? What does it mean for the potential of, you know, sort of cyber attacks and escalation between these two countries?
And then, of course, as this unfolds, the Trump administration's reaction, right?
Absolutely. We've already seen the Wall Street Journal editorial board come out last week and say that Mueller should resign from conflicts of interest, something Mueller's clearly not going to do. We've seen Trump's tweets move in that direction, implying a witch hunt. They should be focusing on Hillary. There's no collusion, no collusion, screaming in all caps. I think the likelihood that Trump is going to seriously consider pressuring those in the FBI and firing them if they refuse to fire Mueller is real. And I think how Congress then does or does not respond would create some serious risk for those looking at the United States.
You're worried about this. Others are worried about this. Market participants don't seem to be all that worried about this as I look out at my market screens. I'm not seeing a high degree of nerves and volatility.
Don't have timing, right? I mean, it's easy to get nerves and volatility priced into the market when it's around, say, a Brexit referendum where we know the date and we understand what we generally think the likelihood of a good or bad outcome and what that would mean. Here, still there's awful lot of scenarios. The bad scenarios are a little fuzzy, and they're also really indeterminate for timing. So it's very difficult to expect that market participants are going to get very squeamish around it at this point.
Ian Bremmer, president and founder of Eurasia Group, global political risk research and consulting firm. Ian, thank you.
My pleasure.
Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is up, let's see here, 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up 0.2%, plus 38 points for the Dow future. As a guide to interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield is up this morning 2.38%. On the week, we should learn who will the White House pick for chair of the Federal Reserve. House Republicans are scheduled to unveil their tax bill tomorrow. Down will go taxes, up will go other taxes, and it's possible the whole thing could add up to $1.5 trillion to the federal deficit over the next decade. Republicans in Congress paved the way for this approach last week with a joint budget blueprint that recommends big cuts to, among other things, health care spending. Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
Although the budget bill doesn't address tax cuts directly, it indicates how Republicans may pay for them, says Aviva Arendine at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. It would reduce funding for the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid.
Cutting the combination of those two programs by $1.3 trillion over 10 years. And the budget also proposes some cuts to Medicare.
To the tune of $473 billion. Medicaid provides coverage for people with low incomes, including many families with children. Arendine, who worked for Health and Human Services under President Obama, says 40% of Medicaid spending is for seniors and people with disabilities.
There is no way to cap and cut Medicaid without hurting those groups.
Federal health care spending is projected to keep growing by more than 5% a year. Dana Goldman at USC's Schaefer Center for Health Policy and Economics says there are ways to spend more efficiently.
There's no need for drastic cuts. What we need to do is get growth under control.
The budget blueprint is just a proposal at this point, with few details about how health care cuts might play out. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
The head of the Emergency Management Agency, Brock Long, will brief senators today on his team's response to this year's hurricane season. One of FEMA's major roles is reimbursing cities and states for paying up front to get things working again, such as electricity. After Puerto Rico canceled its controversial $300 million contract with a tiny energy company in Montana to rebuild the island's grid, Marketplace's Jed Kim looks at what FEMA requires for post-disaster contracts.
Some estimates put Puerto Rico's recovery at $100 billion. To get any FEMA money, Puerto Rico has to show its contracts are formed correctly, with processes to monitor work and ensure appropriate costs. Jeffrey Thomas is with law firm Caris Stone. He says not doing it right could disqualify them from getting reimbursement, or worse.
You see this all the time throughout the country, where state and local governments have to pay back up several millions of dollars very often years later because they didn't procure those services correctly.
He says the Whitefish deal is a learning experience to avoid with other contracts for recovery work. Even so, correctly dotted I's and crossed T's are a little comfort to Puerto Ricans in dark times. Erwin Redlener directs the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University.
We're at a point right now where the protocols and the overwhelming number of requests for assistance may delay the primary purpose of all this, which is to get people the help they need to rebuild.
He'd like to see direction come from the White House to relax protocols. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
And trick-or-treating tonight, if you encounter any spiders, consider their work for the U.S. military. We have a report on modified spider silk used in military uniforms. Spiders excrete stuff that's being genetically engineered to have properties that even Kevlar can't match. If you missed that report on the air, it'll be in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.